Welcome to The Power of Stories, a podcast by women, about women, and for women. Their voices and their stories. I am Sharon Catherine D'Agostino, a passionate advocate for the empowerment of women and girls everywhere, and the founder of SayItForward.org.
And I'm Yodit Kifle-Smith, a creative dedicated to making sure the voices and stories of women are heard. I have the privilege of working with Sharon on SayItForward.org to do just that. In this podcast, you will meet courageous women from around the world whose unique path to empowerment will leave you encouraged and inspired.
Today, we are excited to talk with Janet Nestor, who joins us from her home in North Carolina. Janet is a spiritual seeker, author, licensed clinical mental health counselor, diplomat in comprehensive energy psychology, and energy medicine practitioner. Janet, thank you so much for joining us.
I'm so glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
We're so grateful to you for being here with us. You have written several books, many books. I was hoping that you could talk to us and to our listeners about your award-winning book, Pathways to Wholeness.
It's all about mindful living, and it incorporates walking meditation, breathing meditation, the energy psychology or the energy medicine, mindfulness-based energy psychology is a better way to say it, radiant energy balance, which I helped to develop. And the purpose of radiant energy balance is to help each person reestablish or strengthen their relaxation response so that they can live a happier, more joyful life.
The relaxation response. Talk about that.
It's a natural part of who we are. I mean, it's built into us that when something, a tragedy happens, we're in an automobile accident, we see something that frightens us, whatever. If we're healthy and in harmony and in balance with ourselves and with life, we recover from that very quickly. And that is a healthy relaxation response. If we have a lot of stress, if we have a lot of trauma in our background, we probably do not have a healthy relaxation response because we're used to being in a hypervigilant state. And so radiant energy balance is made to reestablish that normal automatic response, which is to react in an appropriate way when something happens, process the emotion, and then recover. So that's what a relaxation response is.
One of the things that you are is a clinical licensed mental health counselor. Mm-hmm. How has nature been a part of the way you approach that in your work?
Nature is loving and gentle, and it provides ways just to naturally help us relax, find peace, find inner peace, silence. I always suggest people spend time in nature. Something that a lot of people don't know is that trees, the roots of trees actually will take our angst and our anxiety and our depression. And if we finally have a tree that will do that for us, it will take our issues and reprocess them into the earth. And let, you know, while we're letting go, that tree is processing it and making it a more positive thing. Every step we take, we either take in love or we don't. Mm. And I think that's a part of my work as well. Self-love, self-care, self-worth, self-confidence is a huge part of living in peace and with ourselves and with nature and with all other beings around us. I think that's the center of my work, living mindfully and peacefully in love.
When you're in this kind of work and people look to you for a lot of answers, right? But you also, I'm sure, go through your own journey of healing and
absolutely.
How do you not take on the pressure of always having to respond the way that, you know, you're teaching others to respond? Like, how do you balance that where you, you know, take your own advice, obviously, but then you're still on your own healing journey. So,
yeah. I'm like, still human. I have things happen too.
Right.
Well, the way I approach it in my practice is I really don't take responsibility for the outcome of anybody's journey. Everybody has their own journey, and my job is to empower and to support and to be there when they need me. one of the things that I have always done in my practice, which is 20 some years old now, everybody that I work with in private practice has my phone number, my email, and the instructions to contact me when needed. And I really have had very few people over the years take advantage of that. It's usually only when something is really upsetting them. If they're working on trauma, I think they need that personal support, because even though we're working on it in sessions, a lot of times a day or two later, that trauma will rise up and that person needs to reach out for help.
What inspired your journey into this practice?
I grew up on a farm, and farms are beautiful, tranquil, peaceful places, but some people raise animals for food, right? And from the time I was very little, I realized that I had tremendous compassion for the animals that were being raised for food. So that compassion just sort of spread to those people that had to provide the food, because it's not something that people do without thinking. I like the Native American approach to food gathering. It's a compassionate approach where the hunter is thanking the animal for its life and providing an easier death. I don't like the idea of just taking a gun and shining lights in animals' eyes and shooting them. That really disturbs me. So I think the approach should be compassionate and loving, as all life should be compassionate and loving.
Janet, you write about the importance of meditation, and often people say, I can't meditate. And we know everyone can meditate. So what advice do you have to our listeners who have tried meditation and feel that they have not learned to do it well?
My first thing that came to my mind when you asked that question is stop trying. And I really, truly mean that. Just stop trying. Because the more we try, the more we focus on trying to do it, the harder it becomes. And that's one of the reasons I love moving meditation. Breathing meditation is actually considered a moving meditation, because you're using your lungs and your body to reach a quiet, silent place. And last night in the Women's Healing Circle, we did an old, old ancient meditation called Shaking and Breathing. And it was the first time that anybody in the healing circle had any experience with that particular meditation. And they were all stunned, because we're doing all this movement, we're breathing erratically, then we're taking integrated breaths, and then we're shaking again. So you shake out your body, you shake out your emotions, you shake out your mind, you shake out your breath, and then you stand in presence. And presence is that place of quiet and silence. And then you say thank you for what you've accomplished. Everybody in the group was just absolutely stunned at the result. All that action actually quiets your mind. People who always have a mind that's going a million miles an hour were just stunned. So anybody can meditate. It doesn't have to be formal. Going on a walk through the woods is a form of meditation. You know, sitting on a hilltop looking down at a lake and going, oh, this is beautiful, is a meditation. So there are many, many, many ways to meditate. Everybody is born with an oasis, that quiet spot inside of us. Everybody has that. It's just a matter of turning off the chatter of the world and the chatter of our mind to be able to find it.
And do you remember that first time you meditated, you know, remembering what you felt, remembering that, yes, this is now going to be a part of my story, my journey?
I remember the first meditation class I took. It was a transcendental meditation class. And I was halfway, I don't know, I was maybe 20 something, 23, 24. And I'm thinking, oh, I really like this idea, but I don't like it. I'm out of here. I'm not criticizing transcendental meditation. I just wasn't ready for it in that way. I think when I was walking with my grandfather through the woods was a meditation for me. And I think I kind of look for that feeling in meditation, that there are peaceful sounds in nature, right? Mm-hmm. There are birds. There's the sound of the breeze going through the trees. You know, that's all meditative to me.
I love the way you're reframing meditation and experiences in our life where we might not have called it that, but that in fact, in connecting with nature or with ourselves, that it was in fact a meditation.
When I'm teaching walking meditation, I teach people you can meditate walking into the grocery store. You can meditate while you're fixing dinner. You can walk around your house when it's raining and meditate. You don't have to do anything particular. I started walking meditation actually in a Tai Chi class. And when the teacher was teaching Tai Chi walking, where you feel your foot touch the ground and you feel your body as you take the step, feel the motion of the body, feel the flow of energy of the body. That's how I started that process. So, yeah, there are so many ways that we can find that inner peace, and each person will find it differently.
When I hear you talk, you know, it's all about just being so mindful and present. What encouragement would you give to our listeners who are wanting to find that kind of skill?
Do what's natural for you. And I think that that's my best suggestion. I know when I teach meditation, I say, ask people, what part of the day are you the most calm? Where are you, the most relaxed? A lot of people will say in the shower, or when I'm taking a bath. And I said, okay, well, then that's a good place for you to relax and meditate. And radiant energy balance, that energy psychology can be used as a meditation because it really quiets your body. And a silence that a lot of people have never experienced before. I know before we lived in this house, I used to meditate in my office, which people are saying, why would you want to do that? Well, I had a couch and with a great big window with a tree outside, and I could lay down on the couch, which I like to do. Pick the meditation that's right for you. I really do think writing can be a meditation for anyone. I mean, that's why there's writing therapy.
How did you become interested in other people's mental health, in being a mental health counselor? Because that is a big commitment.
I grew up in a family of alcoholics. My grandfather that I loved dearly was an alcoholic way before I was born. He was sober when I knew him. My great-grandfather was an alcoholic. My mother was an alcoholic. Her second husband was an alcoholic. And all of the women in my mother's family had anxiety attacks. And I saw people have anxiety attacks when I was 3 or 4 years old. My grandmother, great-grandmother she had horrible panic attacks. And I can remember visiting her house and she said, here, sit down with me while I'm recovering. And I'd sit there beside her while she was having a panic attack.
Oh, wow.
Literally. So I saw suffering very early in life. I was compassionate to people in general who found life difficult. My first real volunteer job was at a center for disabled children. And when I first went there, I mean, it was a very difficult place to be. The children weren't treated well. It was just chaotic. And then this beautiful, beautiful soul became the director. And everything changed, and I saw what love could do. I saw what compassion could do to these kids whose parents had actually put them in this institution instead of raising them, right? I guess I was making that decision even then. But when I went to college, I actually thought I was going to become a social worker for adolescents, and that didn't happen. Because there wasn't an internship for me. So I didn't go back to school for counseling until I was an older person. I think I was 50 when I got my degree. I encourage people to do whatever they want at any age in life, because you can always make a change. You can always find something that makes you happy, no matter how old you are.
How can we all encourage other women and girls to confidently use their voice and claim their power?
I think we encourage women to claim their power by seeing them, hearing them, mm-hmm. recognizing who they are and what their needs might be. I think listening is the best way to empower anyone. Mm-hmm. Showing compassion and empathy immediately empowers a person. My whole counseling career is based on empowerment and teaching women to speak their truth, to find the strength and power inside them that's there and has always been there, and not to fear being able to say no. I really think the best way to empower anyone is just to be present with them. I try to walk alongside my clients, but not have them learn to depend on me. And I think that's a really important thing in life, to find your own power.
Well, Janet, thank you so much for sharing parts of your story, and also just, I know, inspiring me just to see the beauty and power of nature, but I know all of our listeners will be inspired in that way as well. So thank you so much. To our listeners, thank you for making the time to listen to this episode of the Power of Stories podcast.
Janet, thanks so much for talking with us today and sharing your wisdom and your many important messages, including the power of compassion and empathy. Yuti, thank you so much for your compassion and your empathy and your love. I'm so grateful. And we send out our gratitude to Lisa DeJavine, who is the co-producer and editor of the Power of Stories podcast. Janet, a big, big heart hug and a huge thanks.
Thank you for inviting me. It was a pleasure to be here with you.
And to our listeners, we invite you to visit sayitforward.org, a place where you are welcome to share one or more stories about your unique path to empowerment. Or you can read the stories of other women and girls. This is Sharon Catherine D'Agostino
and Yodit Kifle-Smith signing off for now and hoping you'll join us for our next episode of the Power of Stories podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, we do hope you'll give us a review and recommend the Power of Stories to a friend. And lastly, we want to remind you of the power of your story.